Yo, it is the KFG, and I am. Oh, sorry.
Yo.
Hold on a second.
Bam. All right, yo, it is the KFG. I'm here by myself today. I don't have Mikey. I don't have Dre. So I'm going to need you guys to bear with me. All right, so let's get to it.
And every day, I practice martial arts.
Yo, so here I am. I'm going to take these off because I'm getting feedback in my headphones because I don't know how audio works. Let's hope that we can get an episode here moving with some pretty decent questions and stuff. John Turnbull, how you doing, man? Top supporter of the KFG podcast. Awesome to see you in the comments there, buddy. As you guys probably have noticed, I do not have Dre. I do not have Mikey. Mikey, I think, is in an airplane right now. And Dre, where the hell is Dre? No one knows where Dre is. No, Dre's actually at work. So we are a couple of episodes in the hole, I suppose. Normally when we do our KFG episodes, we pre-record them at least a few weeks in advance. So we have like a bunch of episodes banked. But I was recently in Europe teaching Wing Chun in Hungary. And we had a couple interviews we did, but some of those interviews had issues like audio and stuff like that. So as a result, we are now not, we are in an episode deficit. So that is why I'm coming to you live here on the channel, because I don't have any pre-recorded episodes for you guys. This week, however, we're going to record a bunch of new ones. So cool to see you guys. Cool to see John Turnbull, top supporter, top tier supporter on Patreon. And Cornish Chippy is always in here. And Jonathan Martinez, another Patreon supporter. Awesome to see you guys. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some Wing Chun topics today to kind of give you guys a little bit of a, I suppose, a preview or a little intro into something that I actually do every month, which is I have a live theory and Q&A class. And the way that it works is like it's the first Saturday usually of every month, and it's for about an hour. And I basically talk about a topic for about 15 minutes. Usually it's a very technical topic as far as martial arts go, like it could be something related to chi sao or punching or application or training, or why do we have a long pole in Wing Chun, or why do we do this, why do we do that, just to kind of get the ball rolling. And then after that, I basically, after that first 15 minutes, for the remaining 45 minutes, I take questions from the audience, from the people who are there in the live Zoom. And I do that every month. It's called our monthly Q&A class. And we have a monthly subscription, super duper cheap to do it. I think it's only like $13, $14 a month. With that subscription, you get access to the live classes. So you can go and like ask me any questions you have. And those are way more technical on the podcast. I don't really do technical Wing Chun demonstrations and stuff like that. But for the monthly Q&A, sometimes I'll have a partner, we'll demonstrate stuff, we'll do chi sao stuff. And so, it's a little bit more hands-on as far as that goes. So I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a preview of kind of what that's like. So normally I take a topic, and then after that we do a little bit of a Q&A. And the reason why I want to give you guys a little bit of a preview is because I'm going to offer the recorded Q&A sessions now to my Patreons who are at like a certain level, I think the $15 level or over, they'll get the recordings. And we'll also do it here on YouTube for the memberships for those who are in the $9.99 tier so that there's more goodies and stuff for you guys here who follow me on YouTube. And, just to give you guys something a little bit different, because I know that a lot of you out there are actual Wing Chun practitioners and you want to, you know, get some technical corrections on like, you know, Bong Zhao and Chain Punch. Oh, hold on. Sorry, guys. Okay. And you want to get some technical corrections on those things there. So, I am here for that. So anyway, hope everything is going well. Cool to see you guys. I'm going to go ahead and get started. But before we get started, just want to remind you guys that the best way to support the Kung Fu Genius is on Patreon, patreon.com/thekungfugenius. As a matter of fact, if I even know what I'm doing here, I can even put that there. Look at that banner right there. How professional is that? Incredible. So yes, patreon.com/thekungfugenius. You get access to episodes early, and for different tiers of support, you can get all sorts of other goodies, like what I just talked about, the upcoming theory and Q&A classes I'm going to start putting on there, as well as my Instagram subscriber reels and all of those things too. For those of you who want some more technical stuff, because on the podcast, we tend to do a lot of hot nonsense, a lot of Bruce Lee stuff, a lot of, you know, history and things like that. But, you know, sometimes people want like, hey, KFG, how do I improve my elbow? Hey, how do I do this? Or why does this thing in Chisa work or whatever? And that's pretty much what the monthly Q&A and theory class is for. You can kind of ask me anything. You can ask me technical questions and things like that. So, yeah. So anyway, if you want that support, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/thekungfugenius. That's the best way to support us. So anyway, now, of course, I don't really like to talk a lot about topical news stuff because a lot of people listen to these podcasts way after we record them. So usually whenever you talk about news or whatever, you know, sometimes people listen to this 3-4 months down the line, and it's kind of cringy because it's news. But today was the day that they decided that Mike Tyson and Jake Paul's fight with each other is actually going to be a professional boxing match, which means that knockouts can happen, and this is actually going to go on the record. So it's not an exhibition match. It's not a glorified sparring match. It's serious. So I don't know what that means for our 57-year-old Mike Tyson, but I think the stakes just got a little higher for him and went a little bit in Jake Paul's favor. I don't know how you guys feel about that stuff, or if you guys who watch this are even interested in those kind of things. But anyway, I think those things are interesting. So anyway, for today's topic, I actually wanted to talk about something that is, in my opinion, a little bit misunderstood in Wing Chun, which are chain punches, right? So Wing Chun is very famous for this. If anyone has seen the IP Men movie, especially the first one, you see Donnie Yen marching all these black belts down with these chain punches and hitting them in the face and all this stuff. And Wing Chun is known for this. And there are people who talk about how many punches they can do a second, who has the world record, and all this unimportant hot nonsense. And so it's important that we kind of put this thing into perspective, because there's one faction within the Wing Chun world that I tend to believe kind of overdo chain punching. Like they chain punch all the time, perhaps in the wrong range or at the wrong time, and they're easily picked off by someone who's got some better striking skills. And then you have people who say Wing Chun chain punching is absolute garbage, you shouldn't use it, and blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted to give a little bit of context in terms of how I see it. Perhaps you can find it helpful. And of course, if you don't agree with me, I will still sleep at night. So chain punching, we have pros and cons when we're talking about chain punching. So let's talk about the pros, all right? It is a very efficient way to strike at close range. When you're really close to someone in a range that would normally be a clinching range for most styles, we can actually strike at that range, but because of the position of the low elbow and how the punch acts like a piston, so it allows us a rapid fire close range punching method in what commonly happens in fighting, which is clinching, in that kind of clinching range, right? So one, we have this ability to punch efficiently at close range. Two, because of the rapid fire aspect of it, if a punch lands and you have a clear path, it's a really great way to just keep them coming over the top. Although it's not an example of a Wing Chun fighter, most Wing Chun people who want to kind of point to things that look like Wing Chun being used in MMA usually talk about the Vitor Belfort versus Wanderlei Silva fight in a very early UFC. I think it's like pre-Pride or maybe just right around the time that Pride got started. And basically Vitor Belfort, you know, young, I think it was, if he was 19, maybe his early 20s, juiced to the gills, just runs Wanderlei Silva down across the octagon, not doing Wing Chun straight punches with the elbow down, but basically firing one right on top of the other while advancing forward. And this is, I think, most Wing Chun practitioners' idealized idea of what chain punches would look like. You get that first punch in that lands, the guy gets rocked back, and then it's kind of smooth sailing all the way after that. Now, it's not always the case that it happens like that. Obviously, there are plenty of examples of Wing Chun chain punching not going that way, but that represents a certain ideal. All right. So it is, you know, to go back to our advantages, we have an efficient way of punching at close range. And two, we have a very fast, rapid fire way of repeating chain punches when they're successful, where you can go one right after the other, as opposed to having to constantly reload in between shots. You can basically just keep going with minimal additional movement to the body. So we have those advantages. Now let's talk about some of the cons of chain punching, which I think that a lot of Wing Chun people tend to be a little less apt to talk about, and sometimes pretend, at least in my opinion, that these disadvantages don't exist. One, it's a very range dependent movement. All right, when you look at the range of a longer punch, like a boxing jab, which is all the way at the end of your arm, usually when you're slightly turned, this is basically our kicking range in Wing Chun. When you square up to your opponent, you keep your shoulder in a neutral position, then you have also reduced the range for punching, which is why Wing Chun people who try to box using Wing Chun without the ability to turn their body or use a jab, they're going to run into some issues, because Wing Chun is not a boxing style for boxing back and forth in the ring in its traditional form. It's meant for rapid fire self-defense when someone gets close to you. If you want to use Wing Chun in the ring, you have to find some kind of long range striking tools to keep your opponent at bay until they're within that range where you can go in. You have to imagine that the chain punches are basically done in clinching grappling range. So we have a similar problem to what some grapplers have, which is that although the fight starts out of distance, you have to close that gap to be able to employ your tools, just like a grappler has to close that gap to tie, to get a clinch, to get a takedown, and to bring their opponent down, right? So against a good striker, that's the danger zone, right? Going from all the way outside in the green zone through the red zone all the way in where you can hit. So this is why Wing Chun people have to really learn distance management, because our chain punches are close range. They often fire them way too far away. There is a really funny video. I alluded to it a long time ago, but basically it was a guy dressed up in a Santa costume, and he was going around New York. This is like years ago, like in the early days of YouTube, if YouTube was even around at that time, and was asking people to like kick him. All right. And he was in a Santa suit. It was obviously wintertime. I don't know if he was padded or whatever. But the funny thing was is that, you know, he would just go up and just invite people to come and kick him. And the average person on the street that doesn't know any martial arts or have any experience with this stuff, they, if they even landed, they would kick with almost no power. Like, they would kick him and he'd just be like, fine. But one interesting thing that happened more often than not is how many people just missed. He was basically just standing there. And average people without martial arts, and I mean average in that they're normal people who don't have martial arts training, were commonly missing. They would just fire a kick and miss. And this is a problem with people who either don't have any martial arts training, or if their martial arts training is limited, maybe they haven't had a lot of sparring against a very mobile opponent. And that's using your tools at the wrong range. So the chain punch can easily be misused at the wrong range by people who don't have a lot of experience with it. Firing in from way out of distance with chain punches only to get crushed by a left hook, or just telegraphing it from way too far away as they step in. If your opponent comes towards you and bridges that gap for you, and you're able to use a very direct counterstrike and then follow up with chain punches, then this is a much better paradigm than just trying to, from half a mile away, sail in with chain punches, where the guy can use very simple side-to-side action to avoid those very direct and very linear punches. So the first con, I would say, of the chain punch is a range problem. Two, if Wing Chun is going to be applied in a kind of kickboxing-style sparring. So again, here's where we have to be very clear about terms. When we're talking about practical fighting, we're not talking about going back and forth and tagging each other and checking the distance and then going in and doing this. If that is the way the fight is set up, then I'm under the impression that you signed up for that. That is not the same as defending yourself on the street. There's a difference. For me, the difference between self-defense and fighting is not what, like, a lot of traditional martial arts apologists say, like, hold on, allergies. Excuse me. All right. Everything going off the rails on the single podcast, single solo KFG podcast. I need to take more Claritin. So, you know, one of the issues of chain punches is that when people use them, they tend to think that it's a kind of it's like a one-stop shop. All right, if my opponent gets close to me, I just blitz him with chain punches, and my opponent's not going to do anything. Well, when we talk about the difference between sport and self-defense, all right, there are a lot of people who, you know, in traditional martial arts, they say, oh, MMA is not real. And, you know, if you can't jab you in the eyes or kick you in the groin, it's not real. As if somehow, if GSP was standing in front of you and you were able to kick him in the balls and gouge him in the eyes with all your martial art techniques, as if you could stop him from taking you to the floor and doing whatever he wanted with you when he was on the ground. I'm not that guy. All right. I have far too much respect for real martial artists who train and practice. And I would say I have too much experience to be one of those apologists who are like, well, in UFC, they don't let you kick the guy in the balls, or they don't let you do this or that. They don't let you gouge out his eyes. Yes, in a self-defense situation, if I'm attacked, I want to have all of those things available to me. But that cannot be the only thing that can determine the outcome between whether I can stop someone from seriously hurting me or not. You have to have some different skills, framing skills, some anti-clinch skills, anti-grappling skills, close-range striking, kick defense, mobility, movement. You need all these things. You can't just say, oh, I just jab him in the eyes and kick him in the balls and the fight is over. So some Wing Chun people, I think, who don't understand this, think that the chain punches are equally dangerous and that they're just going to blitz in like this and their opponent is going to be overwhelmed. Maybe if your opponent has no fighting skill, if your opponent is not experienced, or if your opponent is very scared, yeah, maybe. But we never want to underestimate our opponent. So I think therein lies one of the big issues with the chain punches, is that you have something that is extremely contextual, that is being applied as if it's a something to be used as a broad stroke. Someone is in your face. You're trying to tell this dude, hey, buddy, I don't want any trouble. You're trying to get the situation to calm down. This guy's really aggressive. He's not backing down. You need to do something really quick and hopefully put this guy out. Ideally, you can avoid the fight. If you cannot avoid the fight, you would like to stop him maybe with one punch or one decisive blow. And if that doesn't do it, you have a couple other, you know, to follow up, to dissuade this guy from continuing. And that is the kind of context in which a chain punch thrives. When you are moving back and forth with someone in a boxing match, kickboxing match, sports style sparring, it's too one-dimensional, all right? And this is, again, where I think people miss the mark. For practical self-defense on the street, if someone attacks you, you need something that you can recall really quickly. Not something you need to think a lot about. Oh, if the guy's punching me, okay, well, I could do this. By the time you make that decision, that punch has already landed in your face and you're over. You need something that you can recall very quickly and reliably when you're suddenly attacked. And the fight starts usually in a range where you're already there. You do not have a lot of time. And that's where chain punches thrive. But now when you're going back and forth at distance, and this is your only tool, this is too one-dimensional. And this is where you have to see that there's a difference between survival techniques for when someone suddenly attacks you, normally in social or predatory violence, and a ring strategy against another martial artist where all things are equal. And this is where I think Wing Chun people miss the mark a little bit, where they're taking something that's very contextual for one situation and they are applying it across the board. Eddie Tours, thank you so much for your $2.99 super chat. Really appreciate that. And since you sent in a super chat, you are you can ask a question. So Patreons, if you're one of my Patreon supporters, you can ask a question. And anyone else, if you want to ask a question, just go ahead and send a super chat and we'll get to it. So the last con I want to talk about the chain punching is that, you know, so we've talked about the distance thing. We've talked about people using it as an all-purpose tool when it's highly contextual, and then they're using it in wrong situations. And then finally, similar to that kind of boxing situation there, it's common among amateur boxers or people who are boxing for the first time to just try to hunt the head and just to go for headshots and try to knock the guy out. And any seasoned boxer that has good movement, good footwork, can avoid those and pick very powerful shots to catch someone who's just kind of running forward and trying to go for head punches, going for that knockout. So it's considered very poor boxing to just stand there and just gun for the head aggressively and not to be measured and take your time, not to mention the fact that you will often gas yourself out if you don't knock the guy out. So a good boxer with good movement and footwork can kind of weather the storm, avoid it. When that guy's tired or makes a mistake or drops the hands, there comes the uppercut, there comes the hook, and that's the end of the guy who's blitzing for the head. So obviously, if that's considered really bad boxing and you have Wing Chun people that don't know anything else, going in there, gunning for the head, not paying attention to the arms, not paying attention to clinching, sticking, stopping the other hand, positioning yourself to the other person's strong hand away from it, then, you know, it's no wonder that Wing Chun people get in trouble with a very contextual tool when they're trying to apply it kind of with broad stroke brushes and do it at the wrong range in the wrong way. So anyway, just wanted to discuss that a little bit. I think chain punches are extremely effective, but they're effective for a very specific range, a very specific mode of defending yourself. They're not all-purpose general tools meant to be used in any kind of striking context. Also, the other thing is when it comes down, this is a little bit more specifically within the Wing Chun realm, specifically within the Wing Chun that I teach. There are basically only two ways that you can actually know or that you can actually use chain punching. And that is you have either tied up your opponent's arms in some way. It doesn't have to be in a kind of a classical trap. It could just be your opponent is backing up this way here. And when you punch, your forearm is pinning their arm in such a way, even if only momentarily. So while you're hitting them, you're also sticking with your forearm to their arm and pinning them down while you're hitting. So you're getting this kind of simultaneous offense and defense idea. And this is actually the real idea behind simultaneous offense and defense. I'm going to put it in the chat here for those of you who are in the live chat today. So when we are talking about simultaneous offense and defense. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I wanted to mimic how I do my monthly theory and Q&A class for you guys. So you've got kind of a little bit of a feel for it. We say the Siu Bai Da. Okay, so I'll put that in the chats for you guys. Lin Siu Bai Da means simultaneous offense and defense. But the actual translation of that means Lin means to link. It's the same like Lin Wan Kun people usually use for chain punching. Lin means to link. And Siu is defense, okay? Tai Da means with the hit. And most Wing Chun people translate that to mean simultaneous offense and defense. And then they'll talk about, you know, Ta Da or Pak Da or Gan Da or something like that, right? These simultaneous actions instead of blocking and punching. In Wing Chun, we aim to do it at the same time. But the truth is that that is actually only one basic expression of that. And it's kind of a low expression of that. Simultaneous offense and defense in kind of a more deeper, nuanced understanding should not be two arms completing two things, a defense and an offense. It's one arm that does both. Okay, so when your single punch is both punching your opponent and pinning their arm in some kind of way by virtue of the low elbow position, then that is actually Lin Siu Dai Da. We are linking offense and defense in one action, not in two actions. And that's also what's known as Da Sao Tik Siu Sao. I'll put that in the comments for you guys. Da Sao Tik. Hold on, right here. Boom. All right. Hey, we have Richard Norton in the house. Nice discussion. That actually helped my limited understanding of chain punching a lot. Very studious, my friend Richard Norton, Hong Kong movie legend, in the live chat. So awesome to see you. If you guys have not seen our interview, please go check that out. I have this awesome interview. We have to do it again with Richard Norton, talking about his career, his amazing career, and his awesome films. Thank you so much. Huge honor. Thank you so much for popping in the chats. Really appreciate it. So that's what we need to think about when we're talking about chain punching. We need to think about getting in within that range where we can jam up our opponent and use our punches not just to hit, but also tie up their arms. The second way we could use it, and this is the Vitor Belfort, Wanderlei Silva ways, if that first punch is successful and you hit the guy with enough power that his arms are flapping, then of course, go to town and continue stepping in and flying and lighting the guy up. But that is statistically the least probable because you have to have a really solid shot that really rocks him back. And if he's rocked back from one shot, that's probably the only shot you need. But if you wanted to, you know, go for it and then go there and continue, that's how you could do it. All right. But that way is the way we like to see in the movies, like the Hitman movies. But that's the statistically least probable way of using chain punches because it requires that golden hit and an opponent. It's basically already on their way out. If the opponent is still in the game trying to grab you or, you know, trying to clinch you up or tie you up, you're going to need to stick and you're going to need to learn how to defend and use your chi sao to keep that person from tying you up and punch while defending at the same time rather than trying to go like this, not sticking to the arms and the guy's piecing you up with all these punches all over the place. So anyway, that was really cool. See Richard Norton in there. I still get totally thrown off by that stuff. Amazing. So yes, so we have some one or two comments from some Patreons in here. So let me get to that. Wow, Garrett T, $4.99 super chat. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. Let me go ahead and put that. Boom. All right, for Mikey's insurance for that rash in the nether regions so we could touch hands again in NYC, just teasing. Appreciate it. Yeah, every donation gets Mikey closer to having some sort of health care and some sort of cure for his various rashes and ailments. So definitely appreciate that. That is awesome. I also saw we had another one here. If you'll excuse me, normally I have Mikey man and all this stuff. But today it is just me. Again, thank you so much, Eddie Tours, for that $2.99 donation. As Dre would say, the favorite nation is the donation. And now here we go. Roberto S., who is a longtime Patreon supporter and has also come and visited me in the city for my winter ITC. Question for Siva Alex. What do you think of training Kun Siu Kun? Is it just forearm bruiser or does it have practical applications in stopping an opponent's punch? So this is great. Actually, this is a great segue from that chain punching topic into a related topic. Kun, as most of you should know, means fist, all right? Like Bruce Lee's Tikkundo, right? There are different ways to spell it, by the way. The way that Roberto spells it here, which is K-U-E-N, in my opinion, is probably the most reasonable spelling for people who are not linguistic experts. You will sometimes see it, and I'll put this in the chat. So for those of you not watching us live, I apologize, but the proper Yale version of it would actually be K-Y-U-N, which I just put in there, and it's a fourth tone, a falling tone, kun, right? And of course, Bruce had another spelling, K-U-N-E, like tune, but with a K. And so those are a couple different ways of spelling that, but it's the same. It means fist. Fist in Chinese can also mean punch. Okay, so it doesn't just mean the actual fist. So we have a saying in Wing Chun, kun, siu kun. Now that siu is the same siu I just showed you a moment ago with the defense, right? It's not siu like little, like siu nim tao. That's the rising tone. Siu means little. This is siu, high level tone, different character. It means defense. Okay, and the kun, siu kun means to use a punch to defend a punch, okay? This is not just a method of forearm conditioning. In fact, it's not a method of forearm conditioning at all. And a lot of Wing Chun people mistakenly believe so. Well, I just had a crash in the background. I have my windows open. It got a little windy. I have a book I want to show you guys if you'll give me just one moment. Hold on. I know this is compelling TV for you guys right here. Uh, the most, probably one of the most valuable books in my collection, is an original, I think it's a 1952 printing of Jack Dempsey's Championship Fighting. By the way, this a book is so old now, you can get it in public domain, so you can get a PDF of this, but this is an actual, so I have a little plastic dust jacket on, this isn't the actual original printing of it. Bruce Lee also had this book. It was one of his favorite books. It's also where Bruce Lee got his inch punch from, which is a not a traditional Wing Chun inch punch, but it's a modification of the Wing Chun wrist action with Jack Dempsey's falling step. So it is not a pure form Wing Chun inch punch, as nothing Bruce Lee is really pure form. But what's really great about this is that I kind of jokingly always say that Jack Dempsey's book is the best Wing Chun book ever written. This book is, you'll get a lot more Wing Chun knowledge out of this book than you will out of many Wing Chun books. So the idea that we use a punch to defend an incoming punch is a very common idea in Wing Chun. I just talked about a moment ago, using your low elbow and forearm to kind of skim on your partner's arm, but suppress it while you punch it at the same time. So you get this pinning effect, and that's one of the real reasons why the elbow is low. It's not just the power line, it's not just for the power, but that low elbow allows you to pin your forearm as you hit at the same time, and it allows you to use your punches to deflect incoming punches. And what's really cool about Jack Dempsey's book is that he actually shows this as a method. So you see in here, he's on the inside using an indoor punch, and actually using punches to deflect the incoming punch, not by blocking them with the forearm. That would be a method that would be more analogous to what you might see in Hongkyu. In martial arts like Hongar, they often value very strong forearms. So they will do a lot of training like the Samsung Chong training, the three-star blocking exercise where they're trying to improve their forearm conditioning, because they will actually block with their forearms. We don't want to block with our forearms. We want to hit our opponent. If your opponent is bigger and stronger than you and you block with your forearms, you just take the entire blow, but you haven't done anything to your opponent. So the idea is to find an angle where we can both hit our opponent and deflect the incoming punch. Of course, that's an ideal. That's not always going to happen, but that's the idea. Now look at this here. This is from Jack Dempsey's 52 book. That's like a wusao. It's like what we call position two, rear hand and the front hand with a vertical fist. So Jack Dempsey extols the virtue of the vertical fist with the bottom three knuckles, as we do in Wing Chun, the power line, and the actual defense movements in there. He's using punches to defend incoming punches. That's really what we mean by kun siu kun. By training it with your partner, if you're doing deflecting chain punches versus deflecting chain punches, yeah, of course, there are going to be times when your angle's a little bit off and you end up, you know, banging your forearms into your partner's forearm. So you'll have some bruises or whatever. But Kung Fu people get so excited about this stuff, forearm conditioning. And I'm just going to tell you, all right, if you look at professional fighters, all right, what kind of conditioning do professional fighters train? Cardio, all right. They train muscular endurance conditioning, the ability to go not just through the cardiovascular training, but the ability of the muscles to endure sustained activity over a long period of time. So it's intense exercise. There may be a little bit of hand conditioning in professional sports just by virtue of constantly hitting the bag, which we also have in traditional martial arts. There's some kind of conditioning of taking and absorbing blows. And those are the things that are generally considered conditioning in modern martial arts. Maybe some Thai boxers may take some metal rods to toughen up or deaden up their shins. But for the most part, this idea that you have to spend an excessive amount of time, making your forearms stronger and harder so that you could survive a fight, I think is a little bit of a goose egg. While people have definitely broken their forearms in fighting, especially by blocking kicks rather than using footwork to avoid them, you will very rarely hear something like, oh, well, so-and-so lost their fight. Oh, really? What happened? They just didn't have enough forearm conditioning, all right? Meanwhile, in Kung Fu land, everyone is obsessed with banging their forearms on stuff for creating this ultimate hardened forearm stuff. For what reason, I'm not really sure. The amount of time you take trying to make your forearms harder. You could have spent that time making your punch harder. Okay. I would think that that's a way better use of your limited time here on Earth than having really super duper hard forearms. And I know that that's a big part of other martial arts. I'm not trying to downplay it. My good friend, Steve O'Brien Cuddle from Choi Le Phut, he does a lot of that forearm conditioning, and his forearms are probably way harder than mine. My reputation as a martial artist is not based solely on my forearm conditioning. Anyway, before we continue here, because I know I got a few more Patreons in there, I just realized that I forgot to plug in my phone, which I am recording on right now. Do you see how everything falls off the rails the moment I don't have Mikey and those guys? I'm going to go need to run and get my charger before I run out of juice here. So you guys, chat amongst yourselves. Give me some new questions. I'll be back in a moment, and I apologize for having to run out. And I'm back. Look at that. All right. Okay. Yes, I am a professional, I swear. All right. Okay. And we're back in business. Okay. All right. Good. Sorry about that. So when you are using the punches to deflect incoming punches, the point is not to block with your forearm. It's actually to do quite the opposite. You want to find an angle where you're using a wedge to deflect their punch while you come in, rather than clashing this way here. This would not really be the goal. So if you're looking at it as forearm training, I think someone is teaching you incorrectly. All right. Fantastic. So let me move down here. You guys will just be patient with me. Boom. Topher, thank you for the $4.99 donation to the Best Nation. Loving the workouts. Yes, over on Instagram. What are some new workout programs that you picked up recently? Yes, so if you guys don't already do this, you guys should follow me on Instagram if you are on the gram. Let me just put that in there for you guys. Banners. I am a professional, I swear. Boom, look at that banner now. Follow the Kung Fu Genius on IG at the Kung Fu Genius at the bottom there. Look at that ticker. So professional, all right? So today I started posting my workouts. And part of the reason is because I've been a little off my workout routine in the last few months. After my big trip to Hong Kong last year, I caught the virus of unknown origins, which wiped me out for a month solid, but it really wiped me out for 2 months in terms of my energy levels, and I was still really fatigued. I think I had a lot of the kind of the post-COVID fatigue for quite a while. And it made it almost impossible for me to work out because I just had no energy. It was like everything to just get to the other side of the house. And so as a result, I just focused on some other projects. I didn't really work out. And as a result, I mean, I still taught, I still teach. I mean, when I say I'm not working out, I'm probably still doing a lot more than the average person. But I just mean I'm not following my normal, very regimented and very important personal workout routine, which includes physical fitness, conditioning, strength training, martial arts training, all the stuff that I do. I wasn't really able to do it. I mean, we sometimes go through these ebbs and flows, and I was definitely in one of those holes. Now, the last few weeks, I started to get back into the gym, started to train, but I was also away for 2 weeks. So this week, I'm like, all right, screw it. We're back in our regular routine. And I wanted to share it with people because I wanted people to also know that, hey, every once in a while, you fall off your routine. Every once in a while, you have to prioritize other things in your life. And it was because for me, it was hard. It was the first time in my life I was off my workout schedule. My workout schedule is something that is super important for me. And without it, I also felt that I was lacking a little bit of mental clarity that I otherwise would have. So I thought I would just post my beefiest photo that I had, which was right in the middle of the pandemic when I had nothing but time to train, and say, yeah, I know how long it took me to get to that point. It took me about 6 weeks. So I can do that again. I can do another 6 weeks. Maybe I can get an even better condition than I was before. And so I just said, okay, I'm starting today. Give people an idea of the kind of things that I do. So it's in my stories. and I'm going to save them. They're like in a story highlight, which is on my profile. So I'm going to do my like 5 or 6 day, depending on what I do this week, to give you guys an idea. Now, what's very important is I'm a professional martial arts instructor. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. So it's very easy for social media to kind of always make us feel like we're less than adequate. You know, you look at other people, they're always like in shape and they always look great and it looks like their lives are perfect, right? And we know that none of that is true. So we have a lot of this kind of pressure. And what I want to do here is I don't want to put extra pressure on people. I want to say, hey, the most important thing is that you have a goal, all right? Even if that goal is to lose 5 pounds, lose 10 pounds, to be able to last longer on the heavy bag, to be able to last longer in sparring, to look better, to be in better shape, whatever, if you have a goal, then you chip away at it. And my goal is to look as good as I looked in the middle of the pandemic, all right? That has nothing to do with how fast my punch is or how good my bong sao is. It's just a physical goal. But to get there, I also need to be in a regular regiment of all the other things that I train as well. So for me, I mix every day. I try to do, I have kind of 3 different things I do. I usually do 2 things every day. And then a couple times a week, I have 3 things. Okay. So one, I have a morning routine. I think it's one of the best things you can do to kind of set your day right. It seems kind of silly, but if you just get up in the morning and you just go through your joints from head to toe, move around a little bit, maybe do a couple push-ups, kind of move side to side a little bit, you'd be surprised how much more energy you have and how much more coordinated you are. If I roll out of bed and teach a private lesson without warming up, I can do it. I'm a professional. But if I get up and I have some time to move my body around and kind of do some mobility stuff, do some stuff for my hips, warm up my body a little bit, and then I teach a private lesson, I'm like way more coordinated and connected to my body. So much so that if I don't have a morning routine, and my morning routine or my morning exercise could be 5 minutes or it could be 20 minutes. It all depends on what I feel like doing. If I'm going to work out hard that day, my morning routine might be a little shorter. And if I'm not working out that day, my morning routine might be a little longer because that ends up being kind of my workout for that day. So one, I have a morning routine. Sometimes my morning routine is doing knife basics, which is what I did today. You can see the time-lapse video on my IG. I do some shoulder mobility, hip mobility, leg mobility. I go on the bike for 20 minutes because I'm also doing more cardio, so I can lose a little bit of this donut around my midsection. And that was kind of my morning routine today. I don't always do the cardio first thing. Sometimes I do the cardio later. And then the second thing I do is some kind of strength training routine or strength and conditioning. So that might be some kind of hardcore cardio stuff like the rowing machine or something. It could be battle ropes, could be heavy bags, or could be strength training. Just some kind of strength and conditioning. Usually do strength training 3 times a week and kind of meathead training, like hitting stuff or whatever, twice a week. And I alternate those. So strength training one day, the next day I'm just kind of meathead doing stuff. And then the third type of thing that I do in the day is some kind of skill-based workout. So that might be doing chi-sao with my students. That might be doing forms. That might be doing long pole or doing knives or doing some kind of, sort of practicing my grappling, some kind of skill training to improve my abilities. So it's always some kind of morning routine to kind of get moving and get mobile and keep my joints in good working order. Some kind of strength and conditioning or flexibility training. And then finally, some skill-based training. I can do that because I'm a professional. Obviously, if you have a regular 9-to-5 job, you might have to compress some of those things, do those things on alternate days. So very important that people don't take my schedule or the things that I'm putting up there, my routine, and go, oh, I have to do what the KFG is doing. You absolutely do not. You should just do something and do something that works for your schedule. And don't look at what other people are doing or not doing or compare yourself to other people. Give yourself a goal, even a small one, and then work for it. And if you don't attain it, you have still gotten a little bit better. You can readjust your goal. And if you make your goal, come up with a new one. So great question. All right. But really nothing new, just kind of a little more of the same, but just staying consistent. All right. When it comes to workouts, it's really just about staying consistent. John Turnbull writes, one of our longtime Patreon supporters at the toppest most level. One of my students who also trains boxing says throwing in a bit of chain punching works well in boxing, but he does mix it up with other stuff. Absolutely. If you use your long range punching, your jabs, you measure the distance, you come in close, and there's an angle, pop, 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 where you can fire a couple chain punches. That's where that would thrive in a boxing context. But if your partner is moving around in boxing and you're just standing in a traditional chong cell, running in from a mile away doing chain punches, yeah, do not be surprised if you end up eating a bunch of hooks. All right. That's exactly what I would do. I mean, I remember Big Sean Madigan once asked me, what would I do if I had to face a really high-level Wing Chun guy? And I would say I would just box their face off, because if they're just going to try to use Wing Chun and they don't know how to adapt it to a different strategy, I would do that rather than trying to pit my Wing Chun versus someone who may have superior Wing Chun. I would just do that. And I think Big Sean said he would just throw a jab, because most Wing Chun people can't deal with a jab. And that is no jab at Wing Chun. That is just saying in a sport fighting context. Okay. All right. Great question, by the way. Fantastic. So yeah. So, what I did today was basically give you guys a little bit of a preview, especially in that first part, of what I do in my theory and Q&A class. I am going to start putting the pre-recorded Q&A sessions for the memberships here on YouTube, and also for our Patreons at like the $10 or $15 level. Those are just the pre-recorded ones. If you want to actually join the live chat every month, where you can come in and ask questions yourself, then you need to do the subscription. That is in the link below. You can go to my website, cityWingChun.com. That's T-S-U-N, by the way. But just click the link. Don't try to type it in. And then you can join the monthly theory Q&A class, and you will actually get the link for the Zoom, so you can ask me questions and get your questions answered directly. That and Patreon are probably the two best ways to get technical questions answered. But I wanted to do this live in that slight format, and just to give you guys a little bit of an idea in case you guys were interested, because I do get a lot of technical questions here on the podcast. The podcast has always been for martial art discussions, especially about Wing Chun, Bruce Lee, Deep Kune, these kind of things. The problems with the history, the problems with the politics, and talking about these things in I hope what you guys see is a kind of more open and honest way, being somewhat self-reflective as well from my own lineage. But it wasn't like for me to go like, oh, let me tell you, the guys who do Bong Cell like this are totally wrong, and then make it like a diatribe on my way of doing Wing Chun. If you guys want to learn that more technical stuff, I have those products available for you. They are, however, not the regular podcast stuff. Great. Hey, Tony Ocasio, thank you so much for your $5 donation. Sup, KFG, after 63, do you think that Bruce Lee's real secrets were in body mechanics and chi sao and forward pressure, or something else? I don't know. I mean, it's so funny. I can talk about all sorts of topics, like the evolution of the certain aspects of technical things or whatever. But whenever history comes up, all right, as I'm finding out now, as you know, taking aim at William Cheung's very questionable claims about his style, people always think that it's some kind of personal thing, right? It's like, no. The claims have no evidence. We're just talking about that. I don't care if he's the best fighter in the world. People always tend to confuse those things. But whenever I talk about history, people get really bent out of shape, because people have their narrative, and when they hear something else, it's that they don't want to hear it, right? So now we're getting into like JKE politics and what Bruce Lee taught at what time and what he did. I can only say what I've observed, but I wasn't there, all right? So, I mean, I think that when it comes to questions like this, if you ask someone who's from the Oakland era JKE, they're going to give you one answer, which confirms their narrative. If you ask LA Chinatown group, they're going to tell you their own narrative. If you ask the early Seattle group this question, they're going to tell you their narrative. So the problem is that it's not like that, there's one answer to this, all right? Or that there's an answer that everyone will accept. Every answer will only be accepted within the four walls of the person whose narrative that aligns with. I don't know what Bruce Lee's real secrets are, because I would need to go into his head. If you look at his notes, it's not even clear, because most of his notes were about things that he didn't know about. You know, he reads a book and he's writing notes. Okay, this is interesting. These are things that he's studying. but Bruce is not necessarily writing notes about his secrets, which are in his own head. So how would we know that? There's plenty of people who are going to tell you, oh, Bruce's real secret was that he didn't teach forward pressure Chisao after he left Seattle, and that's the reason why the JKD guys, they didn't really learn the proper forward pressure like the way Glover and all those guys did it. Okay, is that really it? I don't know. Did he not teach that to any of his guys later? I don't know. Is that what Bruce would have considered a secret? I don't know. The problem is that this is a very loaded question, and this question is almost, it's impossible to answer, because the responsible thing is to say, I don't know Bruce Lee's mind. As someone who's spent a lot of time listening to him and his recordings and the things that he's written in his notes and learned Chinese so I could understand the Cantonese things that he said and his Chinese, I can't answer this question. All right. My closest friend could not tell you what my secrets are in terms of body mechanics or things like that, because these are things that are in the realm of unknown and unknowable as far as I'm concerned. Great question, though. All right, fantastic. Pedro Delgado, $5. Thank you so much for that donation there. When are you doing a Revenge of the Ninja commentary? Yeah, I think it's time. So I think our Patreon supporters have asked for it. Maybe I could put it up here on memberships. I think it's time. We actually did a New York Ninja commentary. We filmed it. We haven't done anything with it. It's like sitting on our hard drive. But yeah, people... often ask about these things because, you know, outside of being a bit of a Bruce Lee and Wing Chun nerd and Hong Kong martial arts scene nerd, I really geek out about 80s canon films, especially the ninja stuff. And I've watched Revenge of the Ninja maybe not as many times as I've seen Enter the Dragon, but it's up there. Revenge of the Ninja is one of the movies I've seen the most. That and Ninja 3, The Domination. So yeah, I think we should get Mikey and we should get Dre, and we'll record a proper commentary for it so that you can play the commentary while you're watching the movie. We give you like the timestamps, you hit play, and then you basically have me talking in the background while the movie is going on, giving, you know, fun little facts and things like that. But then, of course, you're going to have Dre's awesome reactions. Dre is great on those kind of things because he is so funny. He would be perfect for something like a mystery science theater or something to that effect, because he just says the funniest stuff. But yeah, no, really great question. I love those old ninja movies. I grew up on those ninja movies, and it's a big part of who I am. By the way, I know every time ninjas come up, I always mention this, but in our first season, I did an episode about ninjas, and I talked about ninja movies in particular. I talked about these canon movies, all right? And what's interesting about that episode is that I had just had shoulder surgery. So I was super loopy on meds, like heavy-duty pain meds they give you when you have shoulder surgery. And I was so loopy, and I did that commentary. And it's one of the least watched. The views are not so terrible on that compared to our other videos. But I think people are like, oh, come on, KFG, we just want you to talk about Bruce Lee or Wing Chun or something like that. And, you know, leave the canon stuff to Viking Samurai or whatever. But I really like that episode, especially because I'm like blitzed out of my brain on pain meds. You guys should check it out. Season one is like a ninja episode. It's in, I think it's within the first 10 episodes or something like that. It's very, very early on. But it is absolutely one of my favorites. Awesome. So looks like we're wrapping up here. I really only have time to do an hour. We have two interviews that are coming up. One that we recorded, but we still need to edit. I think you guys know who Stripey Rambles is. He's a much bigger than me YouTuber here, who's got a great Bruce Lee channel where he reviews a lot of the Bruce Lee DVD releases and, you know, like all the, you know, they remaster his films. He's the guy who knows all about that stuff. He's obviously a huge Bruce Lee fan. We had a great interview. We just had a couple technical glitches with the editing. So we have a Stripey Rambles interview coming up soon. I also have an interview in the works with Sifu Della. She is a Wing Chun Sifu from the UK, who just wrote this amazing book called Fight Like a Girl. Very, very excited about that. And so, yeah, we have a lot more interviews. People seem to be digging on the interviews. I like interviews because they're easy. I don't have to talk that much. I can just ask someone a question, let them talk, and just kind of go, oh, that's interesting. Because I finally get to learn something. Although some of you said you kind of like these solo format versions here, but for me, it's stressful. I don't have anyone to bounce off of. I just have to keep talking. And I do this for a living, teaching and talking. So it's I'm used to it, but in the podcast format, I much prefer to have an interlocutor here with me. So yeah, we got a few more minutes. I'll answer a couple of the super chat questions, just some of the things that I might find kind of interesting here. And of course, I'm scanning very quickly because I have to be entertaining and talk and, read at the same time. So this is great. We got, can blitzing the opponent with chain punches counter Hadouken? Hadouken, all right, actually looks very similar to the Popeye charm from the Wooden Dummy. And the classic defense of that is Kwanzaa, all right? Turn out of the way and defend those two hands with Kwanzaa. So yes, we do have a Hadouken defense in Wing Chun. I would not say it's the chain punching though. Boom, boom, boom. Yes, always in art, the tedious, boring routines are the most important. Yeah, this is something I've talked about many times. If people, you know, sometimes people want to know like, oh, what are my training routines? Because when you go on Instagram, you always see what UFC fighters sometimes called sexy training. You know, people pulling the sleds and the battle ropes and the sledgehammers and jumping and throwing and doing all this crazy stuff. And that's really a lot of those things are kind of tried and true strength training and conditioning methods. But the real stuff that professional fighters and martial artists do regularly is grunt, boring stuff. It's fundamentals again and again and again. And so I always joke that if my students want to watch me train, they want to put a secret video camera in the school and see what I get down to when I'm hanging out by myself and doing my own training, they'd be bored to tears. Cause it's like, if I'm doing long pole training, it's just like me repeating one thing again and again and again until I get the rattle at the end of the pole just right. And I hit boom, okay, it's not quite right. I'm there and I'm doing it again and making adjustments to my grip, to my stance, to the power, to the expression until you get it just right. And that's what martial arts is. It's just like this grind of just getting these things a little bit better, hitting the wall bag, not for rounds, like if I'm doing boxing training or I'm doing conditioning on the heavy bag, but just hitting the wall bag, like one by one and trying to get this right sound, getting the power to go as late as possible out of the arm, not too early where it stays in the hand, not too late where you're landing without structure, but just getting that right timing down. And it's just like punching and then like thinking and feeling, I can go a little later. I can do a little more of this, a little more of that. The training that really makes you better, in my opinion, is the very non-sexy repetition of basics. Boom, Chris Beery, another Patreon supporter and student in our Columbus, Ohio branch. I had to cut the blonde locks because I sent him a cease and desist. I think it's so funny. People always get so uppity about my hair. All right. I comb it to the side. People make fun of it. I spike it. People make fun of it. I dye it. People make fun of it or whatever. And half the time the people always make fun of my hair usually don't have hair themselves. So I'm always like, Big Sean used to always make fun of my hair. And he was balding. He shaved his head because he was balding. And I was like, how do you get to talk trash about my hair? Oh, we got another awesome super chat here. Thank you so much, Christian St. Pierre. Great name, by the way. Canadian 699. If you could own one piece of Bruce Lee memorabilia, what would it be? Wow. Oh, that is something. Because there's like a nerdy part of me that would love to have Bruce Lee's watch, or that would love to have something that Bruce Lee wore, like some kind of like really cool thing like that, or the infamous Game of Death tracksuit, which Raymond Chow most likely threw away in the trash can. I really would like to have the recordings that he made on, he had a audio cassette recorder. And he made tons of recordings for his film, I think for his martial arts or whatever. To have his audio recorder with his audio tapes, I think that would be the holy grail for me. Because just to hear him again and to hear his process when no one else is around. I think that's why the phone calls that we have, which I did the Dan Lee phone conversations with even the first episode of the KFG podcast. We did that in one or two episodes. The reason why I love that conversation is because Bruce Lee doesn't know that he's being recorded, which is there's some politics in JKD about Dan Lee having even done that recording and some people not being happy about that. But I mean, in hindsight, we're happy he did the recording. Maybe Bruce did not know that he was being recorded, but you know, it is what it is. It's not my politics, not my wheelhouse. But what's great about that is that you hear Bruce Lee unpolished. He's not on the Pierre Burton show, you know, coming off like a latter day version of Krishnamurti for martial arts, you know, be water, my friend, right? It's not the polished slick Bruce Lee in front of the cameras when he knows that people are watching him. This is Bruce Lee just having a chat with one of his students, and you know, he's using the F word and he's being funny and he's talking about how much he loves boxing, and you get to hear him in that kind of very bro-y kind of way. And you get to hear him. I think it's the closest you'll ever get to really know what it was like to just hang out and talk with Bruce Lee. Because as polished as he was in front of the camera for his screen tests and for the Pierre Burton interview, he's still him in front of the camera. When the cameras are not around and he's having conversations with his boys, that's when you kind of hear the real Bruce Lee. And I think that those things are very precious. So if I could have one piece of Bruce Lee memorabilia, it would be his audio tapes that he recorded. I don't know how many he did. I don't know if there's like tons of them, but I would definitely love that over, you know, having a pair of his shoes or something like that. Whole Cosmos, yes, those tapes remastered to a CD would sell so well. Yeah, I mean... the other thing you have to realize too is that in the early 90s, Linda sold many of Bruce Lee's personal effects. Because, you know, Bruce Lee, he wasn't quite monetized the way he is now in this kind of like icon status. When there are no new films coming out, and in the pre-internet age in the 90s, it was 20 years after Bruce Lee died, there weren't many ways to monetize Bruce Lee after doing Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story. So they had a big auction. It was in 93, I think. If you guys watch my episode in season one with Charles Damiano, he actually talks about it because he's an expert in Bruce Lee collections and stuff like that. And that's when Linda kind of sold the first wave of all of his stuff, his leather jackets. And I think, you know, gloves and training equipment and things that he has, most of the stuff that private collectors have regarding, you know, Bruce Lee's personal belongings, I believe originally came from that first auction. So it's possible they don't have those anymore. So it's very difficult to say. Dion Goss, those cassettes are probably in Beardy's archive. Absolutely. I mean, after all, what does the foremost expert on Bruce Lee not have in his collection? I mean, he has all the footage we've seen for years. Thank God that we have someone who can release footage that I had back in the old VHS days. So anyway, hey guys, this was a lot of fun, and just want to remind you guys, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/thekungfugenius. If you guys like the episode, especially what I did in the first half with the theoretical stuff and talking about a topic in more detail, then I would suggest that maybe you sign up for my monthly theory and Q&A classes. The link is there below. And or if you just want to wait and listen to those things after the fact, which means you can't participate, I will probably put them up here on the $9.99 memberships, and I'll also put the post recorded streams on Patreon as well. So anyway, thanks so much, guys. Hey, that was a lot of fun, and I hope to do this again. And I'm going to do my best to finish this correctly. All right. So anyway, as always, I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpass us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. Love you guys, don't forget KFG products in the links here on YouTube. Take care, guys, bye-bye. Awesome. And that is the end of the stream.